Bhagavad Lila, 10th canto, chapter 89, Krishna Arjuna retrieve a Brahmana's sons. Once a group of sages were performing a yajna next to the Saraswati, and a controversy arose, which of the three primal gods is supreme, Vishnu, Brahma, or Shiva? They delegated Bhrigu Muni, the son of Brahma, to find the answer. Vishnu says, this chapter, the supremacy of Vishnu over Brahma and Shiva, is established through the test performed by Bhrigu Muni. But also, in this chapter, the superiority of Sri Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, even above Bhagavan Lord Vishnu, is shown in a description of Mahavishnu stealing a Brahmana's sons in Dwarka, which Mahavishnu did so he could attain darshan of Dwarkadish Krishna. The basic story is conveying that demonstrates that Lord Vishnu alone should be served because he is the supreme god of all gods above everyone else. To test Brahma's position and sattva-gun, his son Bhrigu Muni did not bow down to his father because he wanted to test Brahma's quality or the greatness, sattva-parikshaya, examine his sattva. Unfortunately, Brahma became angry and intended to kill his son. As fire is subdued by that which has fire itself as its cause of generation, namely water, Brahma subdued his anger by his own expansion, his son. Or, Vishwanath says, just as fire is extinguished by its cause, water, so Brahma extinguishes anger by its cause, the mind. Since we see Agnidev, the god of fire, is also called a second name Asu Yoni, which means born from air, and Agnidev, the fire god, is also another name is Kapita Yoni, born from wood. It is a well-known fact that sometimes fire is generated from water. Then Bhrigu went to Kailash, and Shiva, his brother, happily came forward to embrace him. Bhrigu refused his embrace, telling him, "You are a deviant heretic." Shiva became angry, his eyes burned ferociously. He raised his trident to kill his brother Bhrigu Muni, but then Durga Devi fell at his feet, pacified him. Upon testing Brahma by committing a mental offense, by disrespecting him, Bhrigu understood that Brahma could not overcome the mode of passion. Bhrigu then went to the superior Shiva and committed a more serious offense by verbally insulting him. Bhrigu saw the mode of ignorance in Shiva and the mode of goodness in his expansion Parvati, who stopped his intention to kill Bhrigu. By testing Shiva, Bhrigu understood that Shiva could not overcome his ignorance. Finally, Bhrigu went to He left Mount Kailash and went to Vaikuntha, Shwetadweep, in the material world, where he committed an even greater offense, namely a bodily offense against Lord Vishnu, the best person. Bhrigu went to the Lord when he was lying in his bed in his bedroom with his head on the lap of his consort, Shri. And then Bhrigu kicked Vishnu on the chest. Then Lord Vishnu stood up with his wife Lakshmi Devi to to show respect to the arriving sage. Then he paid obeisances to the Brahman and said, Swagatam Brahman, welcome Brahmana, please sit in this chair. Kindly forgive us for not noticing your arrival, Vishwanath. Not only did Bhrigu commit an offense to Lord Vishnu, but he did it, of all times, while Vishnu was lying on a flower bed with his head in his wife's lap. For Bhrigu to strike Lord Vishnu while he was reclining in this position, and not with his hand but with his foot, was worse than any other offense Bhrigu could have imagined. Bhrigu did this in order to see if Vishnu was in the mode of goodness. However, he saw Vishnu display not even ordinary goodness, but rather Shuddha-sattva, transcendental goodness. And this is explained in four verses. Verse 9, the phrase Bhagavan Saha Lakshmiya means together with the goddess of fortune, implies, even though this offense happened when Vishnu was with his consort Lakshmi, moreover in the seclusion of her private quarters, and moreover with the possibility that Bhrigu could have seen Lakshmi Devi's limbs, yet nonetheless she did not even have a trace of anger against the sage. This is a function of the mode of goodness. Because Lakshmi understood the mentality of her beloved consort, she did not feel angry within herself, even when she saw Vishnu being insulted. This is a function of transcendental goodness. The verse 9 phrase, Satam Gati, means even the associates of Vishnu who reside in Vaikuntha have the same nature. Anticipating that Bhrigu might say, I will not accept this seat from you since you failed to honor me by standing up and coming forward to greet me, Vishnu says, I have committed an offense to you, O sage. Your mercy is my only shelter, so kindly forgive us for not noticing your arrival. Then Lord Vishnu said, if you have forgiven this grave offense, then please purify us with the water that has washed your feet. This holy water from your foot bath, Bhriguji, is indeed what turns rivers like Ganga into tirthas, place of pilgrimage. Vishnu's forgiveness for even so severe an offense committed by Bhrigu is a sign of sattva-gun. On the other hand, Vishnu's thinking himself an offender and his pacifying Bhrigu is a sign of shuddha-sattva, transcendental goodness. Responding to this, Bhrigu said, but for giving pain to you and your beloved consort Lakshmi, I will now have to live in hell for a whole day of Brahma. I am such a sinful Brahmana that I put my filthy foot on your chest, my dear Lord. Replying to Bhrigu's words of remorse, Lord Vishnu said, O dear sage, O ocean of mercy, you have actually made us both most happy today by your auspicious visit to my palace. Pleased by Lord Vishnu's solemn words, Bhrigu remained silent, unable to recite praises as his throat was choked up with prayers. Thus, according to the opinion of ancient authorities, Bhrigu did not commit an offense, since he was like a puppet being made to dance on the stage of the Lord's transcendental pleasure pastimes by the puppeteer named Vishnu. Returning to the Yajnashala at the Saraswati, Bhrigu gave the report to the sages. Amazed upon hearing it, the sages gave up all their doubts and became convinced that Vishnu is the greatest of all the three lords. From Vishnu come peace, fearlessness, the essential principles of religion, detachment with knowledge, austerities, and his glorification cleanses the mind of all impurities. Vishnu is the supreme destination for those who are peaceful, equipoised, those selfless, wise saints who have given up all violence. Vishnu's most dear form is that of pure goodness, and the brahmanas are his worshipable deities. Persons of keen intellect who have attained spiritual peace worship Vishnu without selfish motives. Purport. The sages understood Vishnu to be the supreme, from whom comes the direct manifestation of Dharma, characterized by hearing, chanting, and other activities. And from Vishnu comes knowledge or realization of the personality of Godhead, along with detachment. By Krishna Bhakti, one easily attains transcendental knowledge and detachment. This is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhav Gita, 11:2-42. Bhakti Pureshanu Bhavo Viraktir Anyatra Chesha Trika Eka Kalaha Prapadyamanasya Yatashnatashus Tushti Pushti Shud Apayonu Gasam. Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from all other things occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. In the same way that pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger come spontaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person engaged in eating. This Bhagavatam verse shows that devotion, realization of Krishna, and renunciation appear simultaneously. Kapila Muni says that the austerities, eightfold mystic powers, are also secondary fruits of bhakti. Also, fame comes from Vishnu. Verse 16 names three kinds of transcendentalists, the Munis, Shantas, and Sadhus. Shastras say that Vishnu is a shelter of those striving for liberation, Muninam, those who have attained liberation, Shantanam, and those who are serving the Lord in devotion, Sadhunam. 17 Vishnus. Though Vishnu is transcendental to the modes, he is affectionate to those in the mode of goodness, Sattvam Priyamurtir. Among them, Vishnu is even more affectionate to the Brahmins, whom he honors as his worshipable deities. Indeed, even the desireless saints, Anashisha, the peaceful sages, Shanta, and the intellectuals, Nipun Buddhaya, worship Vishnu alone. Text 18. Someone may question, but Vishnu is nirgun, beyond the material gunas. So how can Vishnu be affectionate to someone who is in the material goodness, in the gunas? He should be indifferent to everything concerning the gunas. Verse 18 answers this objection. Although Vishnu expands into three kinds of manifest beings conditioned by the modes of nature, the mode of goodness, according to Sridhar Swami, is the means of attaining the goal of life, Tirtha Sadhanam. Sattva-gun benefits the jivas, and it is dearer to the merciful, sustaining Lord, who actually does not. Because in reality, Vishnu is indifferent to all the gunas, modes of nature. Thus engaged in dispelling the doubts of common men, the sages attain liberation. Sutta Goswami said, thus did this fragrant nectar flow from the lotus mouth of Shukadeva Goswami, Muni Tanayasya Padmaganda Piyusham. This wonderful glorification of the Supreme destroys all fear of material existence. Bhava Bhaya Bit. A traveler who constantly drinks this nectar through his ear holes will forget the fatigue brought on by wandering along the paths of worldly life. Vishwanath. Verse 20 phrase Padmaganda Piyusham, nectar with the aroma of lotuses, implies that since this narration is nectarian, it is an effective tonic to cure the disease of illusion. And since it has the fragrance of a lotus, it also attracts the bee-like devotees. Now the second story involving Arjuna and Dwarkadish, Sri Krishna and Mahavishnu. In this story it proves that of all the Purusha avatars, first, it's established by Bhrigu's test that Vishnu is the supreme among the lords controlling this world. But then even more supreme than Vishnu is our Bhagavan Sri Krishna, because even Mahavishnu became attracted and attached and made arrangements so he could somehow attain his darshan. Once in Dwarka, a Brahmana's son gave birth to a son, but the baby died as soon as it was born. This story highlights Sri Krishna's unequaled position as the topmost of all forms of Godhead. The Brahmana took the corpse of the baby and placed it at the door of King Ugrasena's court, the ruler of Dwarka. And he spoke as follows, "This duplicitous, greedy enemy of the Brahmanas, this unqualified ruler, addicted to sense pleasure, has caused my son's death by performing some discrepancies in the execution of his duty. I am not at fault, so therefore it is the king's fault that my sons have died. Citizens serving such a wicked king who takes pleasure in violence and cannot control his senses, are doomed to suffer poverty and constant misery." The wise Brahmana suffered the same tragedy with his second and third child. Each time he dropped the dead body of his son at King Ugrasena's door and sang the same song of lamentation, Brahmana loudly declared, "You are a hater of Brahmanas." When his second and third sons died. When the ninth child died, Arjuna heard the Brahmana lamenting by chance, and he addressed, "My dear Brahman, what is the matter? Isn't there some lowly member of the royal order here who can wait at your house and guard? These Kshatriyas are behaving as if they were Brahmanas idly engaged in fire sacrifices." Thus speaking arrogantly, Arjuna glanced around at the people standing there. The Brahman said, "But tell me, what can members of the royal order do in this dire situation?" Pointing accusingly with his index finger, Arjuna answered sarcastically, The Kshatriyas here are behaving as if they were Brahmanas, idly engaged in fire sacrifices. What will happen to those they are supposed to protect? Therefore, the Kshatriyas themselves sitting in this court, they also deserve to be killed. Hear the proof of how unqualified are the Kshatriyas present here. Where Brahmanas lose their wealth, wives, or children, the Kshatriyas living there are merely impostors posing as rulers. Arjuna addressed the husband and wife, those Brahmins who lost their 9 children. If I break my promise to protect your next son from death, then I will enter the fire and thus become free of the sin for having broken my promise. The Brahmana replied, we do not believe what you're saying. Because look, even Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha could do nothing to save my sons. Arjuna replied to this challenge, I am neither Lord Sankarshan nor Krishna, nor his son. I am Arjuna, the wielder of the Gandiva bow. Gandivam yasyavai danu. While saying, I am the wielder of the Gandiva bow, Arjuna showed his bow to the Brahmin and said, Brahmin, do not minimize my ability, which was good enough to satisfy Lord Shiva. I will bring back your sons, even if I have to defeat death himself in battle. Convinced by Arjuna, Brahman went home, satisfied. When his wife was about to give birth to their 10th child, the Brahman begged Arjuna to protect his child from death. Arjuna remained living in Dwarka for 1 year without returning to Indraprastha, waiting for the birth of the Brahman's child. Or, Vishnu says, Arjuna returned to Dwarka upon learning of the approaching birth. When the Brahmana's wife ordered to her husband, bring Arjuna, the Brahmana came in the night and spoke this verse, please protect my child from death. Since the Brahmana had disrespected Krishna, Arjuna, due to his feelings of friendship for Krishna, tactfully offered his obeisances instead to Lord Shiva, instead of Krishna, before he embarked on his mission. Then Arjuna surrounded the entire house with arrows and made a whole protective cage. The sunlight couldn't even pass through that dome-like covering. Brahmana's wife gave birth. The child cried for a few moments and disappeared. So this verse shows that without Krishna's desiring it, neither celestial weapons of Arjuna nor the blessings of Shiva could protect this infant's body. Rake Krishna Mare Ke Mare Krishna Rake Ke. The Brahmana then derided Arjuna in front of Lord Krishna. Just see how foolish I was to put my faith in the bragging of a eunuch. The Brahmana criticized Arjuna directly in front of Krishna because the Brahman would not be able to relish the same pleasure by criticizing Arjuna in the privacy of his own home. He went on, Who can possibly protect he whom Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Balaram, nor Krishna failed to protect? To hell with that liar, Arjuna. To hell with that braggart's bow. He is so foolish that he's deluded himself into thinking he can bring back a person whom destiny has taken away. While the Brahman was continuing to insult him, Arjuna went to Samyamani, the city of heaven where Yamaraj resides. He went in all directions, starting with Yamaloka in the south. He went north to the moon planet, northwest, southeast, southwest, east, and west. Because Arjuna trusted Lord Shiva implicitly as his guru, he did not bother to search the northeast, which is the celestial abode of Shiva. Then Krishna was prevented from entering fire by Krishna, who stopped him, saying, "Arjuna, I will show you the Brahmana's sons. Do not belittle yourself like this." Then Arjuna said, "Do not stop me, otherwise people criticize me as a Kshatriya." Krishna: "The same ones who are criticizing will establish our fame." Then Krishna and Arjuna mounted the Lord's chariot and crossed over the coverings of the universe. Seeing that darkness on the edge of the universe, the chariot's horses, Shaiva, Sugriva, Megapushpa, and Balahaka, lost their way, and Krishna threw his disc to light up the sky. This means that Krishna's transcendental horses had descended from Vaikuntha to participate in his earthly pastimes. However, since Sri Krishna was pretending to be a finite human being in his Nara Lila, his steeds, horses, now acted confused to astonish Arjuna and to enhance the drama of the situation for all who would one day hear this wonderful pastime. Piercing a great dense darkness, a transformation of material nature, the chakra entered it. After breaking through each of the eight concentric shells of the universe, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego, the Sudarshan disc led Krishna's chariot into the limitless, self-effulgent atmosphere of the spiritual sky. There, Arjuna saw the brilliant effulgence of the Brahmajyoti beyond the darkness of material nature. Seeing that most excellent spiritual light spread everywhere, Arjuna closed his eyes. Harivamsh, it says, Sri Krishna tells Arjuna about the nature of this brilliant light known as his Raman effulgence. Brahmo tejomayam devyam mahatya drishtavan asi hamsa bharata shrestha mat tejas tat sanatanam. Arjuna, the divine expanse of Brahman effulgence you have seen is none other than myself. It is my own eternal effulgence. Prakriti sa mama para vyakta vyakta sanatani tam pravishya bhavantiha mukta yoga viruttama. Arjuna, that Brahman effulgence comprises my eternal spiritual energy, manifest and unmanifest. The foremost yoga experts of this world, they enter within it and become liberated. So sankhyanam gati parta yoginam cha tapasvinam tat param paramam brahma sarvam vibhajyate jagat mameva tad garam tadjo gyatum arhasi bharata. Arjuna, the Brahman is the supreme goal of the followers of Sankhya and yogis and ascetics. It is the supreme absolute truth manifesting the varieties of the entire created cosmos. You should understand this Brahmajyoti to be my concentrated personal effulgence. Then Arjuna and Krishna on their chariot entered the causal ocean, ornamented with huge waves agitated by a strong wind, and there they saw a wondrous abode called Mahakal. Sridhar describes, Swami, O Devi, above this universe is the great celestial abode of Brahma, and above that are the abodes of the expansions of Lord Vishnu, and above this are the abodes of Rudra's expansion of Lord Shiva, and above this is the abode of Mahavishnu, which is the supreme residence of Mahadevi. Above her lies time, who strikes fear in all. Beyond it is the ever-fresh spiritual ocean of nectar of Brahman, along whose shore Lord Mahakal appears as the supreme controller of all beings. That's from Mrityunjaya Tantra. Vishnath says, in this context, Brahma's abode is Satyaloka. The abode of expansions of Vishnu refers to a material planet called Vaikuntha, where the demigod sons of Mother Vaikuntha reside. The abode of the expansions of Rudra's Rudra Loka, located within the covering shell of false ego, Ahankara. The abode of Mahavishnu is the Mahavishnu Loka, located within the covering shell of the Mahatattva. The abode of Mahadevi is Mahadevi Loka, located within the covering shell of the unmanifested Prakriti. The ocean of the nectar of Brahman is the causal ocean. Mahakal, or Mahavaikunthanath, is the lord of Mahavaikuntha, Mahakalapuram, situated in the spiritual sky within the water of the causal ocean. Arjuna, they saw a huge, amazing palace in those waters, and a serpent, Anantashesha. He was white and effulgent as Mount Kailash. Ananta's necks and tongues were dark blue. Arjuna saw Mahavishnu sitting on that serpent bed, relaxing on the comfortable seat of Ananta's body. The three Purushas, Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu, the Gunavatar, Shiradakshay Vishnu, is supreme. However, greater than him is Mahavishnu, the creator of the Mahatattva. And greater than Mahavishnu is Lord Purushottam, Vishnu in Vaikuntha, who is here called Mahakal. The personified forms of the Lord's weapons, such as the chakra, were each there, displaying their respective symbols above their own heads. Krishna himself offered obeisances to this boundless form, and so did Mahavishnu. Then Krishna and Balaram stood before the almighty Mahavishnu. As Krishna offered obeisances to his own deity during the worship of Govardhan Hill and Brajalila, so now Krishna paid a homage to himself in his Vishnu expansion for the purpose of playing out his human-like pastimes. As mentioned earlier in chapter 24, together with the Brijvasis, Sri Krishna bowed down to this form of Govardhan Hill, thus in effect offering obeisances to himself. Vishnu tells, Krishna is Ananta, possesses countless manifestations, and this eight-armed form of Mahavishnu is among them. Krishna is Achyuta, infallible, in the sense that he never fails to act like a human being in his pastimes, as a coward boy of Braj. Thus, in order to preserve the human-like quality of his pastimes, Krishna bowed down to this eight-armed form of Vishnu, though actually he is none other than Krishna's own primary expansion. But he did not offer obeisances to Krishna, because Mahavishnu was playing the role of the Supreme Lord. Arjuna perceived that this form of Vishnu had more opulence than Krishna. Thus he became astonished. Abundant power of the earth indicates that Mahavishnu was exhibiting even more personal majesty than Krishna himself. By appearing before Krishna and Arjuna as the Lord of multitudes of Brahmas, ruling over millions of universes, then Mahavishnu spoke confident words to bewilder Arjuna in obedience with Sri Krishna's intention. Vishnu's smile, mentioned in verse 57, indicates that he was privately thinking, "My dear Krishna, by your desire, I will describe my superiority, even though I am your expansion." At the same time, however, I will subtly imply in my statements the supreme position of your beauty, character, and power, and the fact that you are the source from whom I originate or emanate. Just see how clever I am, that in front of Arjuna I am confidentially divulging my true nature as non-different from you. Mahavishnu's smile, Smitam, text 57, indicates his request that Krishna later reveal to Arjuna the truth about his actual position. Thus Lord Vishnu said, "You too, Arjuna and Krishna, have appeared as my parts. Please come back quickly to me." He says this to bewilder Arjuna. Vishnu says the real meaning is, "You too, how it descended along with your kalas, your personal energies, so shakti be, should kindly return to me after killing the demons who burden the earth. Please quickly send these demons here for me for the sake of their liberation. Let them come here and be liberated." And he says, and Harivamsa says that the path of gradual liberation passes the intermediate station of Lord Mahavishnu's abode outside the eighth shell of the material universe, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. Then Mahavishnu said, "Follow Dharma to teach others." Thus instructed by the Supreme Lord of the topmost planet, then Krishna Arjuna assented by chanting Om and bowed down to Mahavishnu and taking the Brahman's sons with him, who were all collected up there, he returned to Dwarka. By seeing all this amazing thing, Arjuna concluded that the extraordinary power a person exhibits, no matter how extraordinary, is only a manifestation of Sri Krishna's mercy. Astonished to see the extraordinary grandeur of Mahavishnu, Arjuna said, "Just see, even though I am a mere mortal, by Krishna's mercy, I have seen the supreme Godhead, the root cause for everything." Then, after a moment, Arjuna thought again, "But why did Lord Vishnu say that he took away the Brahmana's children out of a desire to see Lord Krishna? Why would the Supreme Personality of Godhead hanker to see his own expansion? Perhaps it is some temporary whim of his. But since he is Didrikshana, carries a permanent characteristic, it is to be concluded that Mahavishnu always desired to see Krishna and myself. Even granted that this is true, why couldn't he simply see Krishna at Dwarka? After all, Mahavishnu is the all-pervading creator of the universe, which he holds like an amalaki fruit in his hand." Arjuna ponders, "Is it that Mahavishnu could not see Krishna in Dwarka because Krishna does not allow anyone to see him without special sanction? Well, maybe Mahavishnu doesn't have that power, but still, he comes to Dwarka every year to steal the children of the Brahmana. Why does he not at that time see Krishna, who is visible even to the oil seller and betel nut peddler living in Dwarka? Perhaps Mahavishnu could not see Krishna in Dwarka because Krishna cannot be seen without Krishna's desiring it." And Arjuna continues, "And why would Mahavishnu, the compassionate master of all Brahmanas, have repeatedly tormented an elevated Brahmana year after year, He must have perpetrated such a vile act only because of his strong desire to have darshan of Krishna. All right, Mahavishnu may have acted improperly for that reason, but why couldn't he have sent a servant to kidnap the Brahmana's sons? Why did he himself personally come to Dwarka? Was stealing the Brahmana's sons out of Krishna's capital so difficult that no one but Lord Vishnu himself could hope to accomplish it? I understand that Mahavishnu intended to cause so much distress to a Brahmana of Krishna's city, Dwarka, that Krishna would be unable to tolerate it. Then he would grant Lord Vishnu his audience. Inspired by Vishnu's form as a supersoul within, the distressed Brahmana came to pour out his complaints to Krishna in person after the demise of each of his infant sons. Thus, it is clear that Sri Krishna's status of Godhood as the ultimate supreme Bhagavan is superior even to Lord Vishnu's. Having thought in this way, Arjuna was totally amazed. Then Arjuna asked Krishna whether these were actually the facts of the matter. And Sri Krishna replied, "It was to see me that Mahavishnu, the Supreme Soul, stole the children. He believed only on a Brahmana's behalf will Krishna come to Mahavishnu Loka to see me, and not otherwise. I did not go there, Arjuna, for the sake of the Brahmana. I went there, my friend, just to save your life. If it had been for the Brahmana's sake that I traveled so far to Vaikuntha, I would have done so after his first child was abducted. The reason I went after the ninth child was stolen was not from obligation to Vishnu, but out of obligation to you." Thus hearing the full truth from Krishna's mouth, Arjuna thought that whatever prowess is possessed by any person, even including the Lord of the spiritual sky, has been obtained only by the mercy of Krishna. In this way, we should understand that in this last portion of 10th canto, from the prayers of the personified Vedas, chapter 87, through the narration of the end of this narration, it is found description of the supreme position of Krishna, the Ashraya Tattva, who is the subject of the 10th canto. Sridhar states that this pastime occurred before the battle of Kurukshetra. It is recounted here at the end of 10th canto under the general heading of the supremacy of Krishna's glories. Having demonstrated his supremacy at suitable times, Krishna showered down all desirable things upon the Brahmanas and his other subjects as Indra pours down rain. Thus concludes chapter 89.